Hello everybody and welcome once again to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host Paul, and on today's show we'll be discussing the crumbling of the Bloodline, AEW Collision, and hopefully for the last time, the return of CM Punk. So it's been a while now that, in my opinion, wrestling has been in sort of a holding pattern. And by that, I don't mean that, you know, it's been dull or anything like that. Wrestling has been pretty good, especially the in-ring product. It's simply this, both major news and backstage news and major storylines have been somewhat stagnant. In that, while they've both been good and in some ways interesting, they've felt like they've been the same thing for a while. On the major storylines front in WWE, we've had the Bloodline. Now, I feel like I've been talking about the Bloodline for years, and it's all been very similar stuff. And in backstage news for AEW, it's been all about CM Punk. Now, thankfully, over this last weekend, we've had what I would hope to be major advances in both of these areas. SmackDown on Friday night saw the Usos finally breaking free of the Bloodline and leaving Roman Reigns, the head of the table, alone with only Solo Sikoa as an active in-ring member of his faction. While I would be tempted to say this is some kind of elaborate ruse to gain some effect on a babyface, they haven't actually built up any other babyfaces for Roman to go up against, so I can't see it being like, oh, we swerved you all, and we're really together, and we're against this guy. There is no other this guy. The Usos have been positioned as the obstacle for Roman and Solo. So, with this in mind, they've actually booked a tag match with Roman and Solo versus the Usos for Money in the Bank, which takes place at the O2 Arena in London. Should be a very good match. Immediately makes the show more intriguing and watchable, because, as usual, the Bloodline storyline has been the major focus of wrestling, or at least WWE. Now, I've made no bones about the fact that I think that this storyline has gone on too long. I think everyone involved in it has been very good. They've acted well. They've kept it going in a reasonably interesting manner. But I cannot see, you know, either of the Usos toppling Roman Reigns to become undisputed Universal Champion. Still makes me feel weird that I have to say undisputed, despite the fact there is now a belt on Raw. If the plan has been to make Jey Uso a single star, I do think it's a bit of a weird thing they're doing. Because as good as Jey is, he's been in the company a long time. Fans are conditioned to seeing the Usos a certain way. And while I'm sure in the short term you could give Jey or indeed Jimmy a title match and a title shot and possibly even a title win and a short run with the belt, I'm not sure ending such a quote-unquote historic reign is what's best for business, to coin a phrase. I just think it's a bit of a waste of like over 1,000 days. You should be using this to make somebody new, to make a young guy, to make the next star of your company. And I don't know who that is. I don't know who they think that is. But Roman's a part-time now. The next person he puts over should have been the guy. And if it's going to be Jimmy or Jey, I just don't think that's the wisest thing to do. Nothing against them. I think they're both great. I think they've done very well in this storyline. They certainly did more than I thought they could have done a few years back, when I was just like, oh, they're just tag guys and they're just going to give them a ridiculously long reign so they can beat Demolition and the New Day and all that kind of thing. But they've actually done really well. Character-wise, especially the stuff with Sami Zayn, I thought was utterly brilliant. Meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, we've got the seemingly endless backstage drama with CM Punk. And I say seemingly endless because Punk actually made his return this week on Saturday night as part of the first ever episode of Collision. Now, to me, it feels like AEW has been waiting for Collision for about 4 months. Now, I know that Collision hasn't been announced that long, but it's certainly been rumoured for a very long time. And I don't know, the whole promotion has seemed almost like it's been in a kind of standstill. Like they've been putting on good matches, they've even had pay-per-views. But something's been missing. they've lacked direction, and for that, you know, I can only feel that they've sort of had this kind of thing in the background where they're like, oh, we're going to get to Collision, we're going to get to the extra show, we're going to get to certain points. So to me, it's been get to Collision, get to Forbidden Door, and get to Wembley. Those have been the three kind of upcoming things for them. And now the first of those upcoming things has happened, and the second one is happening very soon. So Collision opens up with Elton John's Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, which I think is a great song, but whether or not it's the theme tune to a wrestling show, I'm not sure, because it just doesn't feel, I don't know, it doesn't feel heavy enough. It's certainly got the frantic nature of a kind of a fight song, but something about it didn't sit quite well with me. Maybe it's the editing of the opening with the images. They kind of match to some of the beat, but the beat is sort of off a little bit sometimes. In the way, it's a great song, as I say. Like, it's not the song's fault. I'm just thinking, does it really match what we're going for here? And it'll probably grow on me. I mean, I remember thinking that having AC/DC for, I think, SmackDown was a silly choice, because they were, you know, not a new band or not an up-and-coming band. I love AC/DC, but, you know, your average watcher is going to think they're an old band, like somebody my dad listened to, or even my granddad at this point. So I thought that was a bit silly at the time, but it soon grew on me. I soon didn't think anything of it. So I'm pretty sure that Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, well, same thing will happen. Moving on from my thoughts on the theme tune, we open up with CM Punk coming out to the ring. Now, this is his United Center in Chicago, the same place he made his return a few years ago, and the pop was quite large. I don't think it was quite as fervent as it was for his first return, because that was after, 7 years away. But it was still a very positive response, which I'm sure they knew they were going to get in Chicago. Now, in the run-up to this, I could only think of one thing that CM Punk had said on the microphone in an AEW ring while he was champion. And that quote goes something like, "The apology must be as loud and as public as the disrespect." So I did wonder what version of CM Punk we were going to get. Were we going to get a repentance, attempt at a babyface CM Punk? Were we going to get a, you know, snivelling heel? Were we going to get an unrepentant Punk? And yeah, that's the version we got. An unrepentant CM Punk who basically came out and said, yeah, I'm back. I'm through being nice, which he said a few times. Which, when did he start being nice? Because he certainly wasn't nice the last time we saw him. He did something really interesting in that he took the AEW logo from around the microphone. So, the squares with like the WWE logo or the AEW logo or even the TNT logo. He just took that off before he gave the interview. So, any recordings of that interview that end up on YouTube do not have anything to do with AEW, or it could seem that way to begin with. So I have no idea what's going on. I have theories. He made a few veiled references to the Young Bucks. He said that he was referred to as One Bill Phil by David Zaslav, who is the Warner Brothers executive who's over the entire thing. He's the guy that's been cutting a lot of programming from, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery. And it's been very crazy because he's the guy that shut down things like the nearly completed Batgirl movie so it could be a write-off. When he came into charge, there was very much fears that AEW might not have that kind of relationship with Warner Brothers Discovery because they were looking to save money so much. So in order to bring up his name, that goes to show something. He says that he refers to him as One Bill Phil because he's the genuine article in a world full of counterfeit bucks. We got Fuck the Elite chants, which I do not expect to hear in most other parts of the country, but we did get them here, so that is something, because I was kind of worried that, you know, his star would have faded everywhere. I know this is his hometown, but if he can get some people on his side, then we've got something. And I do hope that him bringing up the books or alluding to the books and saying stuff like, for the people that are booing me, I'm only sorry that you're as soft as your favourite wrestlers. You know, he was very combative to some people. He talked about it being the wrestling business, which I think was a Scott Hall point. It's the wrestling business, not wrestling friendship. That was always a Scott Hall line that you'd hear from shooting interviews, that he'd give people advice and say, you've got to remember this is a business. So I think that came from there, or at least, you know, it's a similar sentiment. He came out with a bag, a red bag, that he said contained something that nobody took from him. And I thought it was the belt before he made that allusion. Never actually took it out. So I don't know if that's the case. And he gave a really, really good interview. And I'm only hoping that those, like, allusions to the Young Bucks were cleared by the Bucks or cleared by AEW. I hope that this turns into a work. I hope this turns into a big match. Because to start off that way, to start off trying to be combative, trying to tease the audience with something that they want, if you're not eventually going to give it to them, then this is a bad idea, because all it does is create strife. And we know that's not something that CM Punk is totally against doing, but it is a bad idea. Nevertheless, I will say that, you know, CM Punk is still a huge star. He's still got bigger presence than most people on that roster. He's still better on the microphone than the majority, if not all, of the people on that roster. He exudes something. You might love him, you might hate him. I personally think he's great. I think he's going to be a handful. You have to keep your eye on him. But I really do think he's going to be, he's either going to be one of two things. He's going to ignite something, or he's going to cause the downfall of the company. And I think we've already came close to the downfall of the company. So I'm really hoping that he can put all that behind him. You know, he doesn't have to like people, but he can at least just get on with it. And I hope this leads to something cool. After the Punk interview, we ended up with a match for the TNT Championship between Wardlow, the champion, and Luchasaurus with Christian Cage. And correct me if I'm wrong, but at one time Wardlow was over, yeah? I've kind of lost interest because he gets the title and he doesn't do anything and we don't have a good story and he takes a couple of challenges. And he's a very good athlete. He's a good size. I don't think he's terrible on the microphone. But it's just something missing. And the problem I think we had is when people were really behind him, he was against MJF. So at least half of his popularity was, I really want to see someone, anyone, that big guy over there will do, beat MJF up. And now, especially with his sort of victory over MJF being a bit of a damp squib because of all that stuff, I think that his star power has waned. He's been TNT champion and not really got much. And right now, he is not TNT champion because Luchasaurus won this match. Not that you would know it by the reaction of Christian Cage, who grabbed the TNT championship, who celebrated like he'd won it. It reminded me very much of Edge and Christian, where Edge won the King of the Ring and Christian just held onto the title like it was Gollum with the One Ring. It was pretty cool. I'm wondering how long it will be before Luchasaurus realises this guy hasn't got my best interests at heart. And I'm kind of sitting there thinking, what are they going to do with Wardlow now? Because he's going to be something like a 3 or 4 time TNT champion. And he's not going to have had that defining feud, that defining interview, that defining match. And he's been champion, but he's also lost it a lot. It's almost like Sasha Banks, when she was like women's champion, she'd get one defence and lose it, or she'd lose it on the first defence. This was not a bad match, but I do think they need to be careful with Wardlow. And it wasn't something that made me go, wow, I can't wait to see what Luchasaurus does next. I am sort of waiting what happens with Christian Cage, because he's always great. We went backstage for an interview between Powerhouse Hobbs with QT Marshall, and QT Marshall was in it, so I pretty much replaced whatever was said with white noise in my head. The guy's got anti-heat with me. I just don't care. he seems like a good enough guy when I hear him in interviews. He seems like, you know, he's got a big role backstage. But right now, why is he there? Why is he taking up TV time? Hobbs was perfectly fine on the microphone on his own. If he's not, give him Prince Nana. They talk about Hobbs being part of the Owen Hart tournament. So at least that's something for him to do, because that TNT title run did him no favours. It's beginning to look like that belt is cursed. Next on Collision, aka the Island of Misfit Toys, is Andrade El Idolo versus Buddy Matthews of the House of Black. This was a good match in which both of them played off their previous injuries. Obviously, Andrade is coming after a pec injury, and he played that up to the hilt. And Buddy has had some leg problems, and they also played that up to the point where I wasn't sure if they were working until basically the referee got way too involved and hadn't stopped the match. It's like, well, this is obviously a work then. And then they kept going, and it was some hard-hitting stuff. It was inventive stuff. They ended up playing off of their relationships with women who are in WWE. Buddy's with Rhea Ripley, and Andrade is married to Charlotte Flair. And he won with the figure eight after a really good match. And Buddy tapped out, which is the only problem I really have with this. Like, the House of Black are being made to look very dominant in the trios division, and I thought making Buddy look like he was going to quit was a big mistake. They are the trios champions. They've been completely dominant, and having him tap out, I thought was a bad look. But you obviously do not want Andrade to lose in his big return. The lights went out, and then the House of Black was in the ring with Andrade. So I'd expect there to be Roosh will probably team up with Andrade. I'm sure there was someone else. Preston Vance, maybe, even, but he's really done nothing since he turned heel. Maybe they'll come after the Trios Championships next. Scorpio Sky had a little hype package, and I don't mean to be mean, but I totally forgot he was employed. Like, he's good, but I think his best gimmick was with Kazarian, and Kazarian's left for Impact. So what he's going to do right now, we'll never know. They did show him winning the TNT Championship. They showed him winning that ladder match with the big Sonic ring. So they've got some footage of him doing good, but with all the time they've got and all the talent they've got, is he really the best use of their time? That being said, you know, Collision is another 2 hours, so I guess they're just going to fill it up. Next, Tony Nese was destroyed by a returning Miro, and this was awesome, and I love Miro, and I think Miro is great. I just hope he doesn't throw a fit when he's asked to lose, or decide he's not going to do it, or decide he's too big a star to do it. Like, he can't be doing that. WWE don't seem like they're that bothered by him. And this Redeemer character is awesome. So doing the whole, like, oh, that doesn't work for me, brother, is just a bit short-sighted, in my opinion, of him. Unless he's got more money than we know, or he's not really bothered by wrestling, and he just kind of wants out of his contract. We'll never know. But to me, I think this Redeemer character is great. I think he's a great fit in AEW. I just hope that when he's asked to lose, he'll just do it. I mean, I'd say more about the match, but there wasn't really much. It was Miro destroying Tony Nese, and that was it. And the crowd were crazy for him. Good for him. But again, this is kind of a theme with Collision. You know, it's full of the people who have caused problems. CM Punk, Andrade tried to, like, start backstage fights to get fired. Now we've got Miro, who apparently was not happy with any creative he was given for months. Is this either a great show or is it a powder keg? I guess we'll have to find out. Next we have Sky Blue and Willow Nightingale against the Outcasts of Tony Storm and Ruby Soho. Now, Soraya hasn't been around with the Outcasts for a couple of weeks now, or at least a couple of shows, and I think that's probably due to some kind of personal issue. I haven't heard that she's injured. I haven't heard that she's having any kind of problems with an injury or anything like that. It's simply just probably to keep her safe for Wembley, to make sure that she doesn't get injured or hurt, because they probably want to do a lot of publicity with her, being that she's a big UK name. Sky Blue's from Chicago, so she got a very good reaction. I like the fact that AEW are starting to push Sky Blue, but I think it needs to be a slow process. After all, Sky Blue lost a lot to Jade Cargill, and I know everyone lost to Jade Cargill, but Sky Blue lost a lot. So you need to not make sure she doesn't get shoved straight to the top of the card. Build her up slow, and I think you've got a nice star going there. Someone who can actually work a little bit. Someone who's not too hard looking on the eyes, as it were. And someone that the crowd seem to genuinely like to get behind. The Outcasts are finally starting to hit with me. You know, I wasn't a fan of the gimmick to begin with, and I'm still not a fan of the whole paint can thing and spraying people in the face. I think that's a bit dodgy, but the people involved are really good, so it's actually starting to grow on me because the wrestling works and the characters are... It's a cool idea for characters. We've been huge stars somewhere else, and we're angry that you don't view us as the stars that we know we are. It's a pretty good heel character. One of the better recent female matches on AEW I've seen. Like I said, I really like all the characters involved. Willow Nightingale is great. She obviously is the de facto New Japan Strong Champion because Mercedes Moné got injured during the match. But luckily, she could actually carry the belt. People do, again, like to get behind her. They had a good pair of baby faces in this match that people liked. They had a good pair of heels that people didn't like. And that's sometimes all you need. So Sky Blue ends up winning this match, which I hope doesn't entitle her to a world title match, because I don't think she's quite there yet. But, you know, hometown, give someone the win. It's always nice. Then we get a Ricky Starks backstage promo saying that he's entered himself into the Only Heart tournament, followed by a Jeff Jarrett promo who talks about the fact that it's been 46 years since the Tupelo concession stand brawl, and that he and Jay Briscoe would be having another one very soon. The Tupelo concession stand brawl, obviously between Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee and the Blonde Bombers. That's Larry Latham and Wayne Ferris. Wayne Ferris would later on go on to be called the Honky Tonk Man. And it's pretty much one of the first early, like, hardcore brawl kind of things. I know that WCW tried a few concession stand brawls. There was one basically ended up between Max Payne and Cactus Jack and the Nasty Boys. So it's got a kind of a southern history to it. And it's pretty cool. And I think this is... Again, I'm going to eat my words. I was very down on Jeff Jarrett coming in. But this is where Jeff Jarrett belongs, in kind of wild brawls and things where he can use guitars and comedic angles. And I was kind of worried he was going to kind of slowly worm his way up to the top of the card, or not even to the top of the card, just make sure he was all over the programming. But as long as he stays in like things like this and things like his tag team with Jay Lethal, I think Jeff Jarrett's got some good stuff. He's good in the ring. He's always been good in the ring. I think his TNA run just soured me on him. Oh, and his WCW run before that, where he had no rights being a world champion. Then we get to the main event, which was a six-man tag between Bullet Club Gold and Samoa Joe versus FTR and CM Punk. Jim Ross joined our announce team, which today was Kevin Kelly of New Japan Pro Wrestling fame and WWE Attitude Era fame, and Nigel McGuinness. I actually really like these guys as a duo throughout the show because they were less over the top than, say, Excalibur is. And I like Excalibur. Excalibur's, you know, got his own style, and he's very good at saying a lot of stuff very quickly, and he knows the name of the moves, and he puts over what he's supposed to put over. But Kevin Kelly's just more of a sports-orientated presentation. And Nigel McGuinness, I think he's a bit rusty, but I think they'll get there in a few weeks. Of course, in a couple of weeks, Kevin Kelly's going to be off for a while because he'll be doing commentary for New Japan's G1 tournament. So they'll probably get someone in like Excalibur then. But when these guys become more of a regular team, I imagine it becoming very, very good. So they're joined by Jim Ross, who sounds pretty bad. Now, earlier that day, he'd had a fall at home, had a picture of a very bad black eye, and as I said, he sounded very hoarse, always like he got a throg in his throat. But, you know, considering the circumstances, I think he did a good job. I think he wanted to be there. I know he's stepping back now to heal himself up, but I was appreciative of the fact that he did, like, come out there and try and do the job. But onto the match, and what a match it was. I loved everything about it. Jay White, who I've considered to be a bit of a bust in AEW so far, because I expected him to come in at a bit of a higher level than he came in, got to show off some of his like personality, where he's a bit of a loud mouth and he likes pushing people's buttons, and that was fun. And Juice Robinson got to look like a complete psychopath, because he's like the Joker. He's just got a really high-pitched, squealy laugh. It's brilliant. And Bullet Club Gold, I thought, was a dumb idea. I thought Bullet Club, in general, should have just stayed in Japan. But they might actually have something here if they're going to keep this going. Then their partner, Samoa Joe, and he really looked like he had a point to prove here. It was ridiculous. He was doing... He's still bigger than he was back in his prime. Especially his WWE run, he looked like he just had enough, like he was just done. Like he knew he wasn't going to get used. In this, though, he pulled off some stuff I haven't seen for a while. And his strikes were just immense. And I really loved seeing it, because it was like seeing an echo of that 2004 Joe, that Ring of Honor champion. And that's the Joe I want to see. And I think that's the Joe the crowd want to see. Because the moment... any time during that match that he and CM Punk ended up in the ring, it was electric. These people were like, yep. It's like they were like my fans, like the same time period as I was in Ring of Honor as a fan. That it was just incredible. It's what I wanted to see. It's what I've wanted to see for years. I couldn't believe that when they were, you know, when Joe was quote-unquote in WWE, Punk was sort of about, but then not about, or they were on NXT and... they just weren't available to do that thing. And I really hope... rumour is that Punk wants to do a feud with Joe again. And I'm like, yep, I'm all for that. Please do that. Because I was worried that Joe couldn't handle his end. I don't know why. It just struck me as, you know, maybe... he was past his best. And even past his best is still better than most, if you know what I mean. But this was really magical. FTR are always good, so seeing them around was always going to be a good thing. FTR and Punk as a trio, I could see going on for a bit while they see if Punk is going to sort of survive without getting injured, because he does have a history of getting injured. The one thing I really loved about this match is it wasn't the typical AEW tag match, as in there were tags. It was quite structured for quite a lot of it. There was sequences where there was a brawl, but it went back to tag team wrestling for quite a lot of it. And that's a big change for AEW between teams like the Young Bucks, the Lucha Brothers, even Best Friends. Things usually end up being a big, flippy mess. And they're cool and they're exciting. But you miss a lot of the psychology of like who's going to make the hot tag. Are they going to split the ring off in half? You don't see that a lot in AEW because it always just usually devolves into I'm going to moonsault and I'm going to do a triple jump moonsault and I'm going to do a 720 and I'm going to do a 1080 splash and then we're all going to dive out of the ring. And I'm not one of these haters that is like, that's terrible and, you know, people shouldn't like it. If you like it, good. I'm not as big a fan because after I've seen it a few times, I've seen it. It's one reason with not liking the Bucks as much as most people, because I've seen their match. I prefer matches like this where there is more of a story rather than who can do the most crazy move, because it's going to get to the point where I've seen everything. So a little bit of variety with, you know, some actual tag team wrestling, an actual point to the match. And I know I sound harsh, it's just, it becomes a lot when all of your teams do this. So I'm happy there are going to hopefully be some teams that tag in and out, that cut off the ring, that go for double team moves and leave before the five count is over. It really helped. It really made me go, this match is great. I'm all for like your big smiles matches where stuff happens all the time, but sometimes that can happen two or three times a show. And that's when I lose interest. That's where I'm just like, no, I don't want to see this. If everyone's doing the crazy stuff, then none of the stuff is crazy. There was a wonderful spot where Joe had Punk in the Coquina clutch. And I genuinely thought there was a second where I thought Punk might tap out, and that could be the start of their feud. Like, in your big homecoming, in your big return, I beat you, and how embarrassing is that? But they did like a few close calls until finally, I think it was Dax got him out of it. And it's just little moments like that, which are just, it was fun. I'm not saying it was the greatest match ever, but it held my interest. It was different for AEW, and I really enjoyed it. FTR and CM Punk win, and then the show was over. Now, I was somewhat surprised that there was no interruption by someone to get a program going with CM Punk. I expected someone from New Japan Pro Wrestling to possibly come in to kind of drag him into the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. But I have to ask the question, even though he is CM Punk and he's probably your biggest mainstream star, we'll see if he retains that now that he's less popular with the majority of fans, I'd imagine. Well, not less popular, but you know what I mean. He's not going to be as beloved everywhere as he was tonight in Chicago, on this show in Chicago. So he could be a quite divisive character. And one has to ask if he's needed for Forbidden Door. Forbidden Door is like a one-off special show for the year, obviously. But you've already got some absolutely insane matches on it. Is he going to take over from Okada and Bryan Danielson as the main event? No, I don't think so. Or is the main event going to be Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega? See, I think he'd be the third match on the card. And the only person I could see possibly meaning anything could be Kenta in the Battle of the Go to Sleeps. Because they've both had, you know, they have little Twitter spats. And Kenta's been very vocal that he thinks it's disrespectful that CM Punk stole his finishing move. And they've both said they don't really want that match, which can only, to me, is that working? Is that, you know, just them trying to gauge interest or try and create interest? But there was none of that. There was no New Japan interference. There was no lights out. There was no beat down. There was no angle to end the show, which I was surprised by. I really thought there would be one, because you want to hook people for next Saturday's show. I put off releasing this show because I wanted to wait and see what the fallout from the opening interview was going to be. So I've actually left. I'm still recording this on Monday evening. I believe Raw is on live right now. And there's been no kind of fallout. There was a cheeky text from the Young... Well, a cheeky tweet, sorry, from the Young Bucks. Something about, you know, if this was 2018, we'd have a t-shirt out about that remark that Punk said. But, you know, whatever. And I keep waiting for the story to drop about, you know, oh, someone's upset and this is angry and this has split the company. Because I still think this is going to eventually blow up in the company's face. Eventually, this is going to go sour. My hope is that it doesn't. My hope is that everyone comes to their senses and goes, we can make a lot of money for this. But you never know. This is the wrestling business. I think a lot of people are hoping that they can do a six-man at All in London, and my response to that is, why on earth would you do that six man at All in London? All in London has already sold over 70,000 tickets. You can draw another stadium with that match, whereas they've already got, you know, Londoners' money. And that's the show. Sorry it's a little late for a reaction to Collision, but I really wanted to wait and see what the fallout was going to be. I was absolutely positive there was going to be some big bust up backstage. Maybe I'm just being paranoid. Let me know what you guys thought of Collision at PM Barrow on Twitter. Do you think this is ultimately going to be a tremendous success? Are you worried for the future of the company? Do you think Punk is a good thing for the company? Do you think he's a bad thing for the company? Which side do you come down on? I'll be back later in the week to discuss Raw, possibly Dynamite if it's happened at that point, and a run-up to Forbidden Door, which is this Sunday. I've been Paul Barrow, and for the Wrestling Arena, I'll see you next time.